It's Pasta Vazool, baby.
Come on in.
Well, hello, screamers. Welcome to the Scream Until You Like It podcast. I hope you're still screaming. Hope you're starting to like it. I am Clint, way nicer than Fritz. And joined with me today is Baron von Meikenstein, a.k.a. Evil Mike. Evil Mike, how you doing today?
What's going on?
Oh, I am doing just great. Actually, today we're going to be talking about a favorite movie of yours. We're talking about Frankenstein from 1931.
The best.
Yeah. So I guess I should just ask. I mean, I don't have a lot of exposure to this movie. When did you first come across this and what?
Like I said, when I saw this on TV as a kid, it terrified me.
Yeah.
I was like, well, like I said, shocker. You know, I was scared of my own shadow as a kid. So it didn't, but I tried to watch this multiple times as a kid, and it always freaked me out. Then fast forward to like when I was in high school, maybe junior, I took Gothic literature.
Oh, really?
It was like an option, and I was like, Gothic literature, and they found out you read Frankenstein, Dracula. We did Interview with a Vampire. You know, I was like, well, that's better than, because I never read in school.
Sure.
Whenever we did the, we had to read the Good Earth, you know, Animal, like the classics.
Oh, right.
I didn't read them. I never read what I was supposed to. I was always a Cliff Notes guy. And because that's the thing. If I read something I'm not into, I could be on page forever and not grasp it. I took Gothic literature and I was like, and I read Frankenstein and I went through them like that. They like fascinated me. Mm-hmm. And that inspired me to like, well, maybe I should check these movies out now and get, and that's, like I said, I was late getting into them. It was probably like in junior, senior high school, I started watching all the Universal monsters and Frankenstein's always been a favorite.
That's cool that your school had an elective that you could take for that. I mean,
I picked it because I thought I was getting over. I was like, oh, we're going to read. We're going to learn about monsters. And
Yeah. No, I that's a similar situation to mine. I mean, now we didn't have, you know, a Gothic literature elective, but I didn't read my assignments in school either. It was very rarely that I would actually try to get through one of the books that was assigned to me in English class. You know, I think I probably read about 85% of The Grapes of Wrath, and that's probably the best I ever did.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Yeah, I didn't even finish that one, but no, as soon as you get into a subject that you're interested in, suddenly it's a whole different ball game.
And what was funny was my teacher, Mr. Faber, who was teaching the Gothic literature, I had him, I think, freshman year, or I had him previously for sophomore or for English too. And he was a nice guy and he was a really good guy. But he remembered, like, I didn't read a lot. Mm-hmm. And he even noticed, and he mentioned to me, he's like, you're really into this stuff. He goes, you would never like this I said, this good. And he like actually was so like pumped that I was like, because I guess a lot of other kids just treated it as a regular English class, but this, it hit me. And he even wrote something in my yearbook because me and him, like, we talked a lot about these books, Jekyll and Hyde, that we read. And he was like very into them too. He actually liked the horror stuff. And he was telling me about, like, you know, there's sometimes it's not just monsters. It's like, you know, there's good and evil and there's a lot of morality.
Yeah.
Choices people make. And he wrote something like, in my yearbook, like, good is something, but evil is always present, you know, like, to, like, yeah, watch out, because evil yeah always is there ready to offer itself for you, something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, so you actually read Mary Shelley's short story before you actually completed the movie?
Yeah, I read the book first. I mean, I seen, like I said, as a kid, I've seen as far as I could see without shitting my pants.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, yeah. So I knew of the monster. I knew of the movie. I've seen a lot of it on TV. And so, mm-hmm, but I never really sat there and watched the whole and took in the story and mm-hmm until I read the book. And yeah, the book's very different.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Very yeah different.
Yeah, they took a lot of artistic liberties with making the Universal production of Frankenstein. In my 20s, I read a bunch of those stories also. I read The Curious Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I read Bram Stoker's Dracula, and I even read this one, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And you know, I've seen other like movies that were similar to this, but mm-hmm I never actually watched the original in its entirety. It's like I've only seen like clips of it. Yeah, because everybody references this movie, but you know, it really is worth looking at. You know what I mean? It's not it's not even that long. It's like an hour and 10 minutes.
70 minutes.
70 minutes.
Like, yeah, 60 minutes, an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I did find something really interesting in this, that the main character in the Universal movie is not actually named Victor.
No.
They call him Henry in this movie.
They felt that Victor was it's a powerful name, like a almost an intimidating name. They wanted to give him it's actually switched in the book. His friend's name is Henry.
Yeah.
And he's named Victor, and they swapped him.
A couple of the main actors in this movie, we have Colin Clive, who basically played Henry Frankenstein, Dwight Fry, who played his assistant, Fritz.
Not Igor, it's Fritz.
Right. We don't even have Igor here. We've got Fritz. We've got Mae Clark, who played Elizabeth Lavenza, which I guess was Henry's love interest or fiance in this movie.
Yes.
And of course, we got Boris Karloff as the monster. And Edward Van Sloan as Dr. Waldman. You know, there's a couple other main characters, you know, that you get to know if you watch this movie. But those are basically the ones that you see most on screen.
Yes.
I mean, we could take it a bit further and talk about Frederick Kerr, who plays Baron Frankenstein.
I love his character.
Yeah.
What a douche, but he's like. Well, yeah, we'll talk about it as we go along, but I'll explain. Everybody in this movie is a fucking jerk. Like, in one way or another. Really, everybody's a fucking... is a real douchebag in this movie.
Yeah. Except,
you know, it's ironic.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, everybody except Elizabeth. She's a little clueless, but everybody is a jerk.
Right. She seems to be the only one who has any real feeling or caring for anyone else. And tries to actively, you know, help. Let's see. So they basically open this up with Henry and Fritz like hanging out and waiting for a burial to be finished. They wait for the poor guy who's shoveling dirt on the grave to walk away before they.
Like, you know what? That guy, if you would have probably threw him a 20 and said, turn around the other way, like, to not do that, to not bury that?
Yeah.
You'd have been like, yeah, fucking take.
Yeah, yeah. Hand him some money. Say, come back in 20 minutes. We won't be long. You know what I mean? And don't ask any questions. Just fill in the hole, you know? So they did that, and they doubled their work by saying nothing and waiting for it to be finished.
And the scenery... even though it's, you could tell like it's a painting in the background.
Mm-hmm.
It's so like eerie and so like I love that graveyard scene. It's done so well that even though you could tell it's like fake and it, mm-hmm. you could tell like there's one point when the priest walks, you can almost see the shadow on the back.
Okay.
Faintly, if you see, it's quick, but it's still, it's very, I just love the, you know, the look of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And they, I don't know what parts they were harvesting off of this particular corpse, but it seemed like Henry had a very strong interest in getting samples that were fresh or not long dead. I think they did something else while they were there. Didn't they come across a gallows with a hangman on it?
Yeah, well, he said he gathered parts from multiple bodies. He even mentions it. Yeah. So it's not just the one. So they dug the one guy up and they cut another guy who was just freshly hung.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember Henry getting upset that he felt that the brain had been damaged on the hangman. And I guess that was probably the last piece of the puzzle that he really needed.
The neck's broken. The brain is useless. We must find another brain.
Was a good functioning, a good conditioned brain, you know what I mean? And so they were kind of out of luck on that. They couldn't get one out of the one that they dug up. They couldn't get one out of the guy they cut down from the gallows. So I guess Henry had the idea to send Fritz back to his old stomping grounds, which was like a, I don't know, like a medical study university. You know, and we get like Dr. Walden, you know, teaching a class, and he's basically talking about, you know, the differences in brains of normal people and the brains of, you know, criminals. And he's got like two examples there on his desk.
Notice the frontal lobe of this one. You know?
Yeah. And he was just pointing out things on them. And I was like, I was kind of blown away by that because I didn't realize that a similar scene was based on that in a different movie. Like Young Frankenstein came directly from that.
Young Frankenstein took a lot from the original and they took a lot from the Son of Frankenstein.
Okay.
There's like scenes from both, like directly from them. But yes, that's one thing I love about Young Frankenstein, because that's probably in my top three favorite movies of all time. But it's as funny as it is, it's very respectful to the original.
Yeah, yeah.
And a matter of fact, all the equipment, the lab equipment, that's all the equipment used from the 1931 movie.
Yeah, that's awesome. That they
got from Universal Studios.
Yeah. Yeah, Mel Brooks seemed to really take a lot of care in the movie that he made, despite the fact that it was a comedy. And it's probably one of my favorite Mel Brooks movies.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah. And, you know, they changed a couple of things, like where they made a joke instead of, you know.
Oh, yeah. They had
calling it an abnormal brain. He thought it was a name. It was Abby Normal or
Abby
something.
Somebody.
Like yeah, Abby somebody. Abby Normal. You brought me an abnormal brain? You know,
we put an arrow into a 7-foot gorilla. That fucking movie's great.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, so I mean, Fritz is in the research university, and like he crawls in. It's like they end class immediately. Lights go out. Everybody like he leaves.
Not even like 30 seconds later, he's like
he's crawling through the window.
And you get a little fun there. He like gets and the skeleton that scares him.
Yeah.
Real human skeleton.
Wow.
Apparently back in those days, it was cheaper to get a human skeleton than it was to get a fake manufactured a skeleton.
Oh my God. 100%. Oh my Lord. That sounds ridiculous. when you say it out loud, that's amazing. Yeah. And there was some sound when he picked up the normal brain and he tried to walk away. It startled him. I don't even know what that sound was. It sounded like somebody, you know, clanged a gong or something. I couldn't quite figure it out. But he dropped the normal brain and he's like, ah, shit. So he basically turned around and grabbed the abnormal one and he left with that. So I guess he was like, oh, good enough. The progression of things in this movie is pretty quick, actually. Like all the events, like it's like they didn't want to bore you or something. Like they really made sure that this story moved quickly. Because I noticed you really don't have a lot of music in movies of this time.
No.
There isn't a lot going on to really, you know, distract you or entertain you, or and they didn't like do all these like intricate, you know, artsy looking shots. You know, you basically get a scene, you know, like it's a stage production, and then they kind of like fade and move on to the next one. So you do get a couple of different camera angles, but you don't get a lot of that.
No.
So you could tell this was, I mean, other than it's black and white, you could tell this is early filmmaking.
Definitely.
So Elizabeth and Victor roll into town and they stop at the university and they talk to Dr. Waldman looking for him. And he's like, yeah, he's not here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, Henry decided that he was more advanced than what we were doing here. And we didn't have bodies that were fresh enough for him to do his work on. He decided to go and do his own thing. And they, you know, Victor thought he was talking about animals. He's like, yeah, no.
What's the big deal about a few cats and dogs? And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted human remains.
Yeah, exactly.
And apparently he left. Like I said, the guy was ready to get married. And he just picked up and left to go work. And like, he even wrote Elizabeth in a letter and said, I have to put my experiments first, even before you. Like, basically, told, like, fuck you. I'm working on I'm working here.
Yeah. What a dick.
And then while he's away, Victor's fucking basically telling Elizabeth he wants a banger.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, don't talk like that. Don't. She's telling because I like you too much. I was like, fucking even Victor's a fucking douche. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, Everybody comes out to be a fucking douchebag in this movie.
Yeah. It's like, why are you wasting your time with Henry? You know, when I'm right here, you know. Well, what a jerk.
Guy's playing with fucking dead bodies. I'm fucking.
Yeah. Right. And Dr. Waldman doesn't want anything to do with this. You know, he's like, fuck Victor. Fuck you. I'm here teaching my class. You know. He's like, but she kind of begs him, you know, we need your help. We need you to help convince him to stop what he's doing and come back. Cause she's worried about him. He's like, all right, I guess I'll do it. So they go up there, middle of a freaking storm, you know, Henry's basically all finished with the creature and he's all proud of himself and he thinks everything's going together really well. And
then all of a sudden that you hear the knock and he's like, oh, who the fuck is, like, you can see he's like,
yeah,
who he's the like, fuck is knocking now? On a verge of a breakthrough here and people are fucking knocking.
Yeah, he's like, Fritz, I don't give a shit who it is. Get rid of him.
Get rid of him.
Yeah. So Fritz goes to the door and like basically tells him, you know, yeah, he's not here. He's busy. Fuck off. That type of thing. And kind of shuts the door on him. But then, you know, it's like, they are not deterred by this. They start yelling up at the windows and stuff. Finally, Henry looks out, you know, from the upper floor and he realizes Elizabeth is there and he's like, ah, fuck, you know, well, I guess I'll let him in. So, you know, goes down, lets him in, but he's like, really like, hey, I'm inviting you in because it's storming outside, but I'm right in the middle of a breakthrough. Just sit there and take notes because you're about to learn something. I'm going to school you on how to, you know, bring corpses back to life.
And I like what he says. He goes, you three are all sane, right? He goes, I'm crazy. Watch this. Basically.
Yeah.
He goes, we'll see who's fucking crazy in a few minutes.
Yeah. And I love how they did take some care here with the dialogue to have Henry explain, you know, the pains and the cares that he went through to really treat the cadaver parts, you know, like they needed to stay alive. You know, like he mentioned, like keeping a heart beating for 3 weeks while he assembled the rest of the pieces that he needed to put his man together.
Right.
And he was very concerned with, you know, making sure that he, you know, he had like good blood flow and connectivity of all the parts that he painstakingly sewed together. So he really went all in on that. And I'm glad they did that because it shows that it's not as cut and dry as just slap a couple of human parts together, zap it with some electricity, and boom, you got a human, you know. But he was taking advantage of the weather, and he had this really cool like pulley system where he like just sent that platform with his man on it all the way up to like the, I don't know what you call that, like the skylight. Yeah, or something.
It's like an open skylight, sends him out through there. And considering that's the scene where he brings Frankenstein's monster to life, It's like very quick. It's like he went up, boom, he came down and started moving. Like,
yeah,
it was pretty quick.
Yeah, immediately the fingers started moving. You know, the arm kind of came up a little bit. You know, and then he, you know, got all excited and freaked out, and where you get your famous "It's alive" line.
It's alive.
So he was. That was actually pretty good acting for the time. You know what I mean?
Oh, I thought he did Colin Clive did an amazing job. He played.
Yeah.
Because
like, you could feel his excitement.
Crazy, but without like he still.
Yeah.
You could tell like he was very smart and knew what he like. He was crazy, but not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know,
yeah, he was so driven and had so much of a purpose. He seemed beyond sane. You know what I mean? He was just, he's just thinking so far outside the box. People think that his mind is gone. In my opinion.
Right.
Yeah, he as was
crazy
right.
As you call him, he did exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was crazy for wanting to do it and for doing it.
Yeah.
But not because he was bullshitting. He was, you know, he wasn't fantasizing.
Yeah.
No, in that sense of being crazy.
Yeah. And he uttered a line here about how he finally knew what it felt like to be God.
Well, Victor tells him. He says, in the name of God. And he answers him and he says, in the name of God, now I know what it feels like to be God.
Yeah.
Which that was taken out of when it was re-released in the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
They took that scene out. They took that line out.
Wow.
Because it was considered, I told you, back,
blasphemous,
back then, yeah. It was blasphemous. It's this guy was saying he could be God. And, you know, the world was a whole lot religious back then. A lot more than it is now. So,
well, for sure. So originally they took that out of the cut?
It was in the original release up until the late 30s when Universal re-released it, I guess for TV or whatever, but they took that line out. And the movie itself was actually banned in Kansas itself, the whole movie, because it was considered blasphemous and immoral.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
In the novel, Frankenstein wasn't a mute brute. He was actually a smart guy. He didn't look like that with the flat head.
Yeah, yeah.
He was actually pretty intelligent guy. He was just, you know, but he was killing people.
Right.
And he didn't want anybody, you know, to get close to Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But the whole bolts on the neck and flat top, that's all Jack Pierce.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that. And that Universal actually like owns the rights to that look.
Until 2026.
Yeah, how about that?
So I'm curious. I mean, look at all the Frankenstein imitations and knockoffs and other movies and tributes, and I mean, it's got to be one of the most inspirational movies of all time.
Oh, sure.
I mean, whether you like horror or not, yeah. There's just so many versions of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's good, there's bad, there's... It's just insane how many versions of this movie there are, and how many, even like pop culture, Halloween decorations, everything.
Yeah.
It's come off of this.
And think of other things like that TV show, The Munsters. I mean, that was a
clear
inspiration of this makeup.
Big time.
And you had it in other famous films, like, I mean, Frankenhooker comes to mind with, you know, Patty Mullen. And,
you get parodies, you get, you know, and there's some actually, especially in the 70s, there were some great Frankenstein movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had the Hammer with Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
I mean, Christopher Lee played a terrifying Frankenstein. He was scary motherfucker.
He was creepy in a lot of things he did.
Oh, definitely. But again, didn't look like, you know, Boris Karloff, Flathead.
Right.
You know, look at Abbott and Costello, you know, meet the monster, meet Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, again, that's another one of my favorite movies of all time. I got the movie poster right there. And I'm a big Abbott and Costello fan. I grew up watching it with my dad. I love Abbott and Costello. But again, like Young Frankenstein, as funny as they did, you know what made that movie work is they treated the Universal monsters with respect.
Yeah.
They didn't try to make... They incorporated them into a comedy without making a mockery of them.
Right. Right.
You know, and it worked. I mean, you had, even though it wasn't Boris Karloff, I mean, Glenn Strange is an amazing Frankenstein's monster as well.
Yeah.
I feel, and look, I love Boris Karloff. I have a Karloff shirt on.
Yeah.
But I feel like people overshadow him because, yes, he's the OG. And he owned that role. I wish he would have continued to do it.
Yeah.
But Glenn Strange also knocked it out of the park. And he did the monster really good. And, you know, a lot of people, oh, if it's not Karloff, it's... No, Glenn Strange did an amazing job playing the monster as well.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So, I mean, Henry really didn't really know what to do with the creature once he had created it, except lock it away in the dark so it could get used to being alive, well, I guess.
He kind of gave him a chance first. Like,
yeah,
he came, and that's another, hands down, I can tell you, in my lifetime, probably one of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
When Frankenstein, and he backs out of it, again, no music, nothing. I mean, it works. It's just, you just hear like the buzzing of the friggin' of an old movie.
Yeah.
And you hear him, you see him back out. And when he turns around, holy crap. I mean, that was to this day. Like, I get like chill. Like I see myself back there as a kid when he comes out. That makeup is groundbreaking.
That was pretty compelling. I mean, the only thing that was really moving, you know, with any speed was his eyes.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was kind of just like scanning the room and looking at the people that were there. And then you just get that look. They did that like close up of his face then. And you didn't even, see his eyes at that point. It just looked like whites. Yeah. Well,
And do you know, Boris Karloff took out his dental implants.
Oh, yeah.
On purpose, because that's why his cheeks look so drawn in.
So sunken in. I see. Yeah, that's a good addition to the look. I mean,
definitely,
he definitely looked gaunt. It was definitely striking to see it that way. Yeah, yeah.
But like I said, he came out. Henry didn't see him as a monster. He saw him as a creation effort. He came out. He told him to sit down.
Yeah,
you know.
And he was ecstatic that it was able to understand things that he was saying.
And who started, I'll say it right here, who started it all and sent Frankenstein down a fucking downward spiral?
Probably Fritz.
Fucking Fritz with that fucking fire.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Henry was all like, "Would you get that torch out of here?" You know.
Yeah.
And he keeps waving it around and upsetting him. You know, it's like he can't talk in this movie. He's just like moaning. No. He's like,
so now they have no choice but to like lock him up because they're like, okay, now this thing is crazy. And what's Fritz do while he's locked up? He goes and he fucking torments him with the fire.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck you, Fritz. I'm like.
And then he went in there with a whip. And he starts
with the whip, too. It's like.
Starts cracking that thing right in front of him.
Oh.
Yeah. You know,
when you and then like when you cut like in a few minutes later and then you hear Fritz screaming.
Yeah.
And they go down and he's like hung up. I was like, good for you, fucker. I was like, fuck you, Fritz.
Yeah. Like I can't act like you didn't deserve it. You know, he's like,
yeah, I was like 100%.
He's taunting this huge creature, you know, and clearly getting some sort of joy out of
oh yeah.
Taunting it and scaring it and getting a reaction out of it, and who knows, it's probably some like response of his as to being some, you know, like, you know, deformed, you know, peon, you know, that's at the base level of society. Finally he has something that he can,
if you want to get revenge for all the shit you've taken, make sure it's somebody your size, not
yeah for sure. So it's like they really don't explain Fritz's character and why he's treating the creature that way. But like when he finally gets it, it's like, well, that wasn't a surprise.
No, not at all.
You know, it's bigger than you and it didn't like what you were doing. So sorry, Fritz, you're strung up. I thought when they were talking about the hypodermic needle and all that stuff that they were going to like poison him. Turns out it was really just a sedative. Right. So they encourage him out of the room, you know, waving the torch around. Dr. Waldman hits him in the back with the hypodermic needle and it takes a minute, but you know, the creature does like collapse on the floor. And for whatever reason, you know, they didn't just take the opportunity to kill the creature. He's like, I'll take care of it. You go see your fiance and try to forget some of this shit here and just get married. And
wait, now the father even goes up there.
Yeah.
Baron Frankenstein goes up there. I love him because even the doctor tells him, he's like, you need to take your son. He goes, what do you think I'm here for? For fun, you know?
yeah, exactly.
He's so like looking at the whole place like a dirty, look what my son has come to.
Yeah. And clearly Henry's not well because he's upset over the death of Fritz. You know, he's struggling with, you know, this thing that he created that he doesn't know what to do with, you know, and the only thing they've successfully done is sedate it.
Yeah. So he agrees to go back.
Right.
Because that's what the doctor said. You go back with your father and get married and he goes, I'll take care of this over here.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you get the doctor, he's got basically the creature laying on a table, kind of half strapped to it, I guess, I don't know. And he's making notes and you hear like him talking about how it needs increasingly more sedative in order to keep it down. And it doesn't last as long and he's got to keep giving it to him. And he's like, but he makes a note about how he's going to dissect it. And I'm like, if it's...
Well, as a doctor,
yeah.
As much as he thought Henry was crazy, and after seeing that he did what he did, I'm sure as a doctor, he was curious.
Yeah.
To like, so, you know, to find out more about it.
Right, right.
But you know what? Nobody made, as smart as these guys are supposed to be, like he made nope. Like, you see the size of this thing. Mm-hmm. You've already had instances. He's already killed one guy in a matter of no time.
Oh yeah.
They made like took no precaution whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like when that thing was on the table, like I would have friggin' tied that fucking thing down with like about 150 feet of rope and fucking that thing was not getting up if I was in charge. I was
I'm telling you that had it been me, I would have been so scared, you know, once we sedated that thing. Within minutes, it would have been missing its head.
Yeah, chop its head off. I was just going to say that.
Yeah, that would have been my solution. He's not doing shit without a head and a functioning brain. We'll dissect him later. Let's take his head off.
We just hit him with a light sedative. We're like, don't worry. We'll take care of it later.
It'll be all right. Oh, shit, he's waking up. Give him some more, you know? Yeah, so I don't know if he was planning on dissecting him while he was still alive. I don't know if that was
his plan. That's a possibility.
You know, like the frogs in E.T., you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because I'm just going to chloroform him first and then...
Yeah. So, yeah, I seriously questioned that decision, and I was not shocked when the creature kind of woke up and basically choked the doctor out and killed him.
Yeah.
And he leaves. And that opens up the possibility for the creature to be roaming the countryside. And that's kind of where we get that other really famous scene where he just comes across that little girl that's playing and picking flowers, and she doesn't even know to be afraid of him. She just invites him over and hands him a handful of flowers. Here, you take these, I'll keep these, and you know, watch this. And she's like tosses flowers into the water, you know, and he's having a great time.
Yeah. For a split second there, he was like enjoying life. It was like, that's what I'm saying. Even that, as bad as what, he threw the girl. First of all, he threw that girl like friggin' a foot from the friggin' edge. I mean, come on. You couldn't fucking paddle back. I mean,
Yeah.
But I mean, he wasn't, you know, trying again. Bad rap. He was playing. He had totally no ill intentions when he did
right. You know, and for whatever reason, he just had this thought to pick her up and throw her in the water, you know. But we have to,
he knew to run and get the fuck out of there though. After he did it, he was like, fuck this.
Yeah. He didn't know what to do. He knew clearly he had done something that he couldn't take back, and he just
he's like, off. I'm out of here.
He just got out of there. Yeah. Henry and Elizabeth getting ready to be married, like right after that.
Yes.
They're making the preparations. It seems like it's the actual wedding day. She's in her dress and everything. You know, they're checking on her. Henry hears noises in the house. He thinks the creature is there. I know Elizabeth had expressed a concern as that Dr. Waldman wasn't there yet.
He's always late.
Yeah, I'm sure he's on his way.
As like, that dude was just choked out by your monster, dude.
Exactly. But
and then he locks her in the room. He's like, nope, you stay in there. And he locks her like against her will. I'm like,
yeah, what the hell was that all about?
And another jerk move before that, which I thought was funny, when the father is right before that whole commotion with the monster, they're all drinking. Uh-huh. And the father has some like wine. He's like, this is so old. My grandmother used to hide it from me as a kid, you know, like, and then he tells the butler dude, he's like, get some champagne for the servants. He goes, this will be wasted on them. I was like, what a dick.
I know, man.
Like, you fucking dick.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely had his own ideas about who was good enough to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But so like they think they hear the creature, you know, once they get word that it's roaming the countryside, and they're like running all through the house looking for it. And while they're going through the house looking, the damn thing like ends up outside Elizabeth's window and climbs inside and scares the shit out of her. You know, I thought he was going to abduct her, if I'm being honest with you.
A funny part about this.
Yeah.
May Clark told Boris Karloff that like even in the makeup, because she said they were very good friends.
Uh-huh.
And she said he was like one of the best people to work with. He was nice. She said she told him that even though I know it's you in the makeup, she goes, I'm scared. He came up with a thing. He said, he goes, as I'm coming at you as the monster, he goes, I'm going to wiggle my finger down so nobody notices. He goes, so even though all that's going on, you'll notice it's still Boris there waving at you.
That's cool.
And she said that actually helped the scene because she was actually scared to do that scene with him.
Wow. That's something, man.
I mean, you could get it. It's scary, especially for the time. It's scary fucking makeup.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen so much now, and we're so desensitized to all the crazy makeups that can be done in a movie that it's difficult to imagine that being as scary as it must have been.
This is my biggest argument with people when, like, anti-universal people, and they're like, "Oh, yeah. Frankenstein's not scary." I'm like, you know what? Fuck you.
Yeah, you know. Take yourself out of the modern times and just roll back the clock in your head. What
nobody
it must have been like
at that time saw anything like that.
Yeah.
And I know we saved a tribute for the end, but this is a funny part too. All right. Boris Karloff had a kid while filming.
Oh, right.
His wife gave birth and he went to the hospital in makeup and he fucking freaked the fucking shit out of the fucking hospital.
Yeah.
All the you know, because at like, this time, nobody even knew what Frankenstein was. You know, the movie wasn't even released. It was filming.
Right.
And he just went directly to the hospital in full makeup and basically scared the shit out of the whole fucking hospital. How fucking great is that?
That's hilarious. Yeah. I'm glad. I bet those people had something to talk about, you know.
Right?
Some of them probably needed therapy after that. You know?
Big time.
Yeah. Yeah. So for whatever reason, I guess she fainted. I don't know if he threw her on the bed or what, but he left. They storm into the room, you know, realizing that he was just there. She's basically, you know, half delirious, you know, like somebody who's like just freaking out, but and they just can't handle what just happened to him, you know, like she seemed almost like she was in a feverish state.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is I could see how you might act like that, you know, half catatonic, half, you know, freaking out, like anxious, and just scared, like not making any sense.
Yeah, 100%.
And you know, then the father of the dead girl basically strolls in the town carrying his little girl. So we have this this almost chaotic scene where he's upset about this, you know, they're talking about it, you know, roaming around and like no one's really thinking anything, you know, except we need to get a mob together and go find this thing. And Henry is very much like, I did this, I caused this, I need to find it and put an end to this. I mean, probably I'm sure I missed something in there, but
yeah, not probably one of the first examples of like that mob mentality in movies. Like that's even that reference, you know, whenever they get the pitchforks out, you know, mob.
Yeah, the torches.
Like this.
Yeah.
And I read an interesting thing I never thought of. Nobody knows what the monster looks like.
Right.
The only people that have seen it are the little girl who's dead, Henry, Victor, May, and the doctor.
Right.
These people are running through the woods and they don't even know what the fuck they're looking for.
Right. Exactly. And the only thing that really seems to help them, you know, is the fact that they have dogs to try to, you know, like scent. So I don't know what they used to scent the creature, whether it was something they knew he was near or touched, you know, but they seem to be going in the right direction, going halfway up the mountain.
Right.
And Henry's really the only one who's like trying to think like the creature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just roaming around, you know, aimlessly and trying to take some direction from the dogs that they have. But he's like going down like a separate little canyon. He's yelling to him, hey, come back over here, you know, and he starts climbing up this one area, finds the creature hiding. And the only thing that he has is a torch. So it's like he has no weapons, you know, somehow. I mean, what was it? He had no plan. He couldn't have had a plan.
No. And that's a classic scene, too, like when they're up on the mountain and they both like meet each other.
Yeah.
Again, you got that eerie fake background. And
yeah, For sure.
And that, and basically the monster fucking kicks Henry's ass.
Oh, it wasn't even close.
No, yeah, he just again did it choke them out, friggin' dragged them up to the windmill.
I did notice that during that scene where they're grappling, you know, that he lost the torch almost right away. And then he got thrown to the ground and basically landed
in the torch and did not catch fire. Like, I actually rewound that part. This dude's just sitting on the fire.
Yeah, but kudos to him. He didn't break the scene. He lifted up his leg. You can see him bat the torch out of the way, and then he got back up and continued the struggle fight scene with this creature. I was like, holy crap, that guy was a professional.
Yeah, he
he got lucky that he didn't catch his leg on fire. But
and so Boris Karloff now picks him up and carries him up to the windmill, which was a pretty, from what I read, a nice steep hill.
Yeah.
Boris Karloff was getting so much attention and rave that I read that James Whale got a little jealous.
Oh.
And was starting to not like all the attention being brought to Boris Karloff.
Okay.
So they said he deliberately kept reshooting that scene where Boris Karloff had to carry Henry Clive up the mountain.
Nice.
To the point where Henry Clive even said to Whale, you know, this is crazy to make him keep doing this. Why can't we use a dummy?
Yeah.
And he said, that'll ruin the shot. You know, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
So I was like, even James Whale was a dick. I'm like, what the fuck with this movie?
I know.
And I loved it. I mean, James Whale produced, he gave us some of the greatest fucking stuff ever. He was talented, way talented.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, wow, when I read that, I was like, wow, he was a douche to fucking Boris Karloff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Boris Karloff didn't bat an eye. He carried him up there every fucking time and didn't complain.
Yeah. Yeah, the consummate professional. You know, yeah. I didn't see where that was going, because before they really gave you a shot of the windmill, they showed you the mob releasing the dogs. I was like, oh, he's screwed now. The dogs are going to run him down. And I'm like, is this going to be like the first movie where a couple of dogs get killed? You know, because I think every other movie that I've seen where a dog encounters, you know, some creature or killer and the dog gets it. But it's like the dogs didn't have a chance to get there. They show him strolling into the windmill and shuts that door. And then shit falls down and the door's kind of barricaded. I'm not sure what caused him, you know, to instinctively want to get inside that building. But Henry, you know, wakes up. And he tries to maneuver around. You can see him just trying to formulate a plan, but his real plan is just avoid the creature.
Yeah.
And he even gets up to the second level of the windmill and tries to get himself over the railing. Creature grabs him, you know, and prevents him from doing that. Because I don't know if the creature wants to kill him at this point. I'm certainly not thinking that, you know, that he views the doctor as his only bargaining chip. You know what I mean? He's probably not that advanced, but he just, for whatever reason, he doesn't want him to leave. Until ultimately he just
said, you know what? I'm over this shit. This is
fuck it.
This has been carrying on way too long. Fuck you. And just throws him over.
Here's him like a rag doll, and
the dummy. You can tell the dummy's
it hits one of the sails of the windmill.
Well, yeah,
you know,
and just slides off.
it goes down towards the ground. He slides off and hits the ground. So it's like, but they kind of gave you the impression that's really the only thing that allowed him to survive the fall. So clearly it was done on purpose to kind of break his fall and allow him to hit the ground without dying. Yeah. And they're like, we got to get him down off the mountain, you know, and the mob is like, well, let's just set it on fire.
Yeah.
they, And that was a really cool scene. I mean, you basically see it slowly like building flames and the creature not knowing what to do on the inside and getting like pinned underneath a beam. And that's kind of where they end the movie. They just burnt this windmill down around him. So technically you didn't see the creature die.
No.
And the fact that we had more movies after this, you know, tells me that he probably didn't.
And we get one more opportunity for his father to be a douche again. Because now we go and we see Henry lying in the bed.
Yeah.
May is with them, Elizabeth. And the servants knock on the door and they have this special, his grandmother's wine.
Yeah.
And like all like six servants, all girls come out and they're like, they knock on the door. Like, we thought this Henry like some of your grandmother's wine. And he goes, like, yeah. He just looks and he goes,
he doesn't need this. This
now. I'll drink it. I'm
like, yep. That was pretty cool. That is Frankenstein in a nutshell. I don't know if you have any more trivia that you'd like to share about that.
Sure. I got the box office. Holy crap. This movie was made for $262,000.
Wow.
Its box office was $12
million. Uh-huh.
So I would say it did pretty good.
I'd say it did. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Mary Shelley, only 19 years old when she wrote the novel.
Wow.
That
was considered to be one of the first, like, if not the first science fiction story.
But yeah. And the movie takes from several places.
Okay.
It, not only from Mary Shelley's book, but it also takes from the 1927 play by Peggy Webling. I believe that had heavy influence on it as well as Mary Shelley. And like I said, the very first Frankenstein movie, I believe, was a silent movie. I forgot the year, but if you look, it was more like Quasimodo. It was
okay.
It, you know, like nothing like we got now. Another cool, I just found this really cool, in the opening scene, in the graveyard scene, when the dude who's burying the body, they actually put a microphone in the coffin. So when the dirt hit the coffin, you heard it a lot louder. And you notice it. Wow. If you go back, watch when he throws the dirt on the coffin, how loud it is.
Wow.
I said, that was cool. First film to use the famous Castle Thunder sound effect.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Boris Koller, 44 years old when he did this.
Wow.
You know, he said he was a late bloomer before he, and you know, they originally planned on Bela Lugosi playing Frankenstein.
Really?
And there actually is somewhere, they claim that it's now considered lost footage, but there was a test reel of him in the Jack Pierce makeup. Wow. The name Victor would sound too severe and unfriendly to the American audiences, so they swapped the names.
Interesting.
Boris Karloff's shoes weigh 13 pounds each.
I heard that, like overall, like all the costuming that he wore was like over 40 pounds. And I don't remember the exact poundage of what it was, but basically he was performing, you know, with carrying around like nearly 50 extra pounds while he's, you know, doing all this this creature acting.
And I think those boots were originally, they were for something that had something to do with guys who were like paving streets and coal, because it would burn the bottom of their soles.
Okay.
That's why they were so,
so thick.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Boris Karloff isn't credited until the end credits.
Okay.
when the first credits come up, it says the monster with a question mark. John Carradine was also considered to play the monster.
Oh, yeah?
But he considered himself too highly trained of an actor to be playing monsters. So you know what? Fuck you, John Carradine, but you just fucking blew it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I bet he changed his mind about it later.
Yeah.
But acted like it didn't bother him. No, that role is beneath me. Yeah. Wow. I'm telling you.
John Carradine, you just fucked up big time.
Yeah, he did.
All right, man.
And that's Frankenstein in a nutshell.
There you got it. Well, do you want to rate this thing first? Or do you want me to do it?
I'll go for it because this is a 10 out of 10 for me. This is, like I said, I love this movie. I could watch it any. It's one of those. I could throw it on anytime and watch it, enjoy it. It's impacted me since I'm a kid, and I'm 51 years old, and it still has. Like I said, I love it. I mean, I love all the Universal monsters, but.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of sometimes upset that I like Frankenstein is my favorite because I feel like he's everybody's favorite. But
yeah.
I feel like they really, in the time, they like broke barriers with this movie. They went against everything that they shouldn't be. They shouldn't have done. And they did it. Mm-hmm. And, so for them risking it all, we got one of the greatest monsters in history. So,
yeah,
I have nothing bad to say about this movie.
Yeah, agreed. You know, this would have been risk taking at the time. And this definitely would have been groundbreaking. Nothing else like this had really been put out yet. Of course, this did spark some other movies, you know, that we also consider to be, you know, groundbreaking and never been done before and all that. This was, you know, looking at this, you know, from somebody who's used to watching modern movies, going back and looking at it, you know, this was actually pretty good. I mean, I was never really a huge fan of like black and white films, you know, and I always struggle when there doesn't seem to be much of a soundtrack. It's like I need a little something extra. Sometimes that grainy audio is it just feels like there's more silence than anything because it's got all that.
You have a lot of dead spots, like
yeah. But I mean, you adjust to that. You know, if you focus on the story, you really adjust to that. So I mean. Going through my checklist, you know, I did find it interesting and thought provoking, thought it was conveyed well, scene choices were good. You know, the backgrounds looked awesome, you know, even if they were painted.
Oh, absolutely.
That budget, even though it sounds small, was probably pretty big for the time. And it seemed to be used really well. I would have liked a little bit more creative, you know, artful camera work, but I mean, what we got was good and you could see everything. So that's the important part. The lighting was good. It wasn't choppy. The pacing was good. I seemed to understand everything that was happening. Sets were good. Wardrobe good. Good props. Sound effects, like you said, it did have them. I mean, I didn't notice it at the time, but you know, you mentioned the dirt hitting the coffin, and
that's like,
yeah,
really being, you know, that's like technological shit going on in 1931. That's like.
Yeah, for sure. Like they wanted you to get that. Like somebody put the thought into it and they're like, we want you to hear the thud of the dirt hitting the box. You know, the creature design was good. You know, I'd call it a memorable movie. I definitely recommend it, you know, to anybody who's thinking about watching it. Pull the trigger, watch it. It won't take you long. 70 minutes. And you know what? I'd probably watch it again because as always, that's the biggest compliment that you can give a movie is the fact that you go back and you watch it again. So all in all, you know, I didn't knock it for too many things. I did only give it a 23 out of 30, which is basically a 76%,
or a 7.6 out of 10. And I think that's really respectable for a movie that is, you know, early, missing a lot of modern elements, you know. But I can definitely see why this is loved by many. I can see why it's your favorite. And I think that if I go back and watch it again and pick out a few more things, I might even change my score.
I think you know what should.
I mean? Yeah. It's, you know, is it perfect? No. What is a perfect movie? I've never seen one. If one day I ever score one 10 out of 10, I expect you to say, you feeling all right?
Well, I said to myself long ago when we started, I was like, I'm never going to give a 10 out of 10. Cause that's just, I can't give this any less. Cause just like I said, this is, it's nostalgic for me. I mean, a lot of movies are nostalgic, but like in a fun way, this was very, you know, this hits a lot of chords with me.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it does. I'm absolutely sure it does. And this would be a great movie to see in a theater experience. So, I mean,
which I did. I went a couple of years ago, one of the theaters in Long Island, and they had a double feature, Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I would think something was wrong if you didn't make every attempt in the world to get something like
Mahoney
that.
If Mahoney or something does a Universal night, we got to go.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, we went to the Colonial to watch Young Frankenstein one time. And it's a completely different experience when you see it in the theater.
It is when you see it on the big screen.
Yeah. So I think seeing this movie like that would help it a lot and really enhance, you know, the way you see it and experience it. So, yeah. Good flick. You know, I'm glad I finally, you know, went and saw it. And if you're on the fence about it, watching this, quit it. Go watch it. Check this movie out.
You know, like my teacher told me back then, there's a lot of moral issues come into play, and it's there's more than on the that you see on the surface. So you should give it a legit watch.
Yeah. That's
if
right.
If you don't like it and don't want to watch it, then fucking bafungle. But
that's right.
That's what I say.
Yeah. All right. Well, on behalf of myself, on behalf of Mike, on behalf of creatures and doctors that want to be gods everywhere, I say, remember.
Smile, you son of a...